Changing your relationship with your phone is actually easier than you think. And I know that because I've done it. As most of you know, I left Instagram in 2025, which was supposed to be forever, but it turned out to just be 6 months. And the reason I left was so that I could understand on a much deeper level what was happening in my body, you know, with my attention and my mind and my phone. And during that time, I went deep into the research, the psychology, the neuroscience, the nervous system regulation aspects of it. And I started to ask the real questions I had. Why did my phone create resentment? Why did I feel powerless in relationship to my phone and social media? And why did I feel anxious even when I wasn't using it? And why did just using it less never actually work? There was something deeper that I need to understand. And what I found surprised me. It turns out that there are very real biological and psychological reasons our relationship with our phones feels so charged. And it goes beyond just dopamine loops or willpower. And here's the most important part. Once you understand what's really happening, changing your relationship with your phone stops feeling like a fight. It actually becomes pretty practical and it feels very grounded. Now, on January 4th, I'm going to be teaching you everything I've learned. I'm running a live workshop on how to reclaim your attention and rebuild a healthy relationship with social media and your smartphone without having to give it up and without swimming in shame. I'm going to be sharing the most profound insights I gained during that six-month break, things I've never shared before, along with simple tools that you could just apply immediately once you're done the workshop, tools that will work with your nervous system, not against it. And if you want 2026 to be the year you're the most present, most focused you've ever been, and more available to your actual life while still using your phone intentionally, this workshop is for you. You can learn more and register at createthelove.com/reclaim. That's on January 4th. I can't wait to see you there. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. So I want to tell you two stories. They're pretty good stories. But the first one is I was at an event a little while ago, and I had done my talk in the morning, and then I was in the green room, like where all the speakers and the sponsors and people are, and I was talking to a couple ladies, and I saw this chocolate bar on the counter, and look, like these green rooms are filled with tons of different foods from different sponsors. So I find this chocolate bar, I read the ingredients, I'm talking to them about the chocolate bar. I'm like, oh, sweet, they have chocolate here. And I look at the ingredients and it's got like lion's mane and it's got gold in it, which I was like, sweet, like gold, that's great. Like that's all the rage in the wellness space. And so I split it with one of the ladies and I go about my day. And so about an hour later, I'm feeling a bit off. And I'm like, oof, I wonder if I just ate something bad. And then I'm like, am I on a microdose of mushrooms? And then I'm like, this is starting to feel a little more than a microdose. And so I go, I'm like, I got to go figure out what was in this. So I go back to the green room and I find the empty container and I look it up and I look up and it has 4 grams of mushrooms in it. So I've eaten 2 grams of mushrooms. And I know if you've never done mushrooms, I know that 2 grams of mushrooms is a pretty good full send. Like you're going inward. And if you're in social situations, it could be probably challenging, but I've been on them before and I'm like, if it gets to be too much, I can just leave. And so I end up in a conversation with a friend of mine and there's a guy that she knows there. And I'm like, I accidentally ate 2 grams of mushrooms. And I'm like, and they're turning on here pretty quick. And he's funny. He's like the guy I didn't know. He's like, oh man, that's amazing. Like, come with me. And he's like, I'll get you out of this sort of social situation. And I end up on a boat in the harbor watching the sunset. And so it was about as dreamy of an outcome as you can imagine, right? But as this is all happening, I'm also thinking about the person I split the chocolate bar with who I didn't know personally. You know, we just innocently split a chocolate bar. And I had tried to find her before I left and I couldn't find her. And I talked to someone else and I was like, hey, I I think she runs this part of this experience. And she's like, oh, I think I know who that is. I'll try to find her. When I get back, I'm like, oh, did you find her? And she's like, oh, she went back to the hotel. She seemed fine. And I'm like, okay. And then I'm like, what's her name? And she says her name. And I'm like, let's look her up on social media so I can be sure it's her. And then I look her up and it's not her. I'm like, oh man, like this is wild. Okay. So as I'm coming down from this experience, I'm really thinking a lot about how is this person? Like I obviously didn't choose to go on a journey, but neither did she, but I have experience with it. And like, what if this person spent their whole life saying no to drugs and now they have an unexpected experience, right? That could be scary, very, very much so. And, you know, it could be profound. There's so many possibilities, but I'm beginning to ruminate and like be really worried about that and her. And I can't find out how to find her, right? So I call my buddy, who's a therapist, and I'm like, hey, man. And he knew that I had taken them by accident. He was with me in the evening, earlier in the evening. And I said to him, hey, like, I'm really thinking about her and very worried about her. And he's like, yeah, you know, I totally hear you. And he's like, and can we also just open ourselves to the possibility that she's quite experienced and she's having a really profound and prolific time? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I can like hold that possibility, but I'm also really thinking about the other possibility much more. And he's like, I get that. And he's like, and maybe when you're coming down from this, maybe tomorrow or in the next couple of days, we can explore why the first thing you go to is like the worst possible scenario. And he said, I'm not discounting your experience or that you are concerned about it. And I think it's really beautiful that you're concerned, but we can maybe explore that later. And I was like, yeah, okay, I could do that. And shit, like what's going on in this person's life? Is she okay? So as I'm laying in bed ruminating, I'm like, well, I'm on mushrooms. I might as well have a conversation with God. And I was like, look, God. And I like to tie scenarios where I really need something because, you know, a lot of us pray or meditate when we need something, like when we really need a miracle, right? All of a sudden we become the most religious people. We believe in God more than we ever have. We're like, yo, please just take care of this. This would save my life. And I like to tie things that are necessary actions that I need to take to those types of requests. Like, I don't think you get anything for free. So you have to trade some form of like where you're at of integrity, right? So I was like, listen, God, what do I need to do in order, like, I want this woman to be okay. And I had this, all of a sudden, this peacefulness come over me. And I was like, what do I need to do in order for this to like be realized? Like, what do you need me to do? And the immediate answer I got was change your Instagram username. And I was like, okay, I hear you because I've been negotiating that idea, right? Like you've heard me if you listen to the podcast for a while. And if not, I've had this sort of split between having Create the Love and It's Mark Groves. And this, I felt very split in terms of where do I express what? And then I came back to just really expressing on Create the Love, but there was something sort of incongruent about the username now. And it felt like part of my old identity. And then I just needed to let it die. And, you know, if you're creating a brand and you are the face of that brand, I think it's very important that you name it you. And I remember hearing that from Danielle Laporte years ago, because then she could shift. I heard that from Marie Forleo too, that you can change what you do and the people who love you will stay with you. And then the brand doesn't sort of lose its continuity. And so I'm like, okay, but it's just a username. Like, what is the benefit of me changing this username? I could do any content under the name Create the Love. And the answer that I got back in this psychedelic state was, it's not just a username. And like, you need to logically understand why you should do it. And it's not actually in the world of logic. Like, you're not going to be able to understand it in the world of logic. And I remember this thing I heard years and years ago, that the mind can't conceptualize what it's created within. Like, the mind is part of the 3D, right? The logical left hemisphere, all that kind of stuff, is part of this human experience. It is the fleshy part of being in a human body. And so it can't actually understand outside of what it's in. So you can't understand spirit through the mind, right? Because that's like science's attempt to solve God, right? And that's why we want to solve it with physics, or whatever you call it, the universe, whatever your name is, the etheric, all is one, what never makes sense, what can't be named, doesn't matter. But it's like, the physics is how people who are more linear make sense of the all is one, right? Because we want to understand it. But part of faith in general, or just the human experience, and Jonathan Haidt talks about this, that like, we all have a God-sized hole within us, that we have a need for God. And that could be, from Jonathan Haidt's perspective, more of a logical thing, that we need God. Like, he thinks we need it as humans in order to, and maybe he shifted on this, but back when I heard him talking about it, that we need it as a way to sort of reconcile our impermanence here. And look, like, I did a podcast maybe a couple months ago that was, God is either everywhere or nowhere. Like, you can't just believe God only lives in some parts of your experience and not others. So you can only, like, you have to look at your life and be like, okay, either everything that happens, even the hard stuff, is in service of my development and in service of trying to bring out the greatest evolutionary possibility of me, of my soul's evolution and expansion, or it's not. But it can't be, sometimes it is. Only the good stuff is God working, and all the bad stuff is God not working, right? So I really, when I had that conversation with God, I had this awareness, like, oh shit, I want it to make sense, but it's not going to make sense. And it's actually the act of changing my username that demonstrates that I trust something beyond what makes logical, strategic sense. So the next day I go to try to change my usernames. And this is before I'm going back to the conference to go find this woman, because I want to make sure she's okay. And I try to change them, and I couldn't swap them, because one, when you change a username, it puts it into like Instagram jail for, the assumption is, 14 days. And because Create the Love has such a high following, you actually have to contact support to get the username changed. Now, here's what's funny. I couldn't change it. So then I messaged someone I know who works at Meta. She's like, look, changing usernames is really hard, blah, blah. But I actually remembered the night before on the boat, I was talking to my very good friend about Instagram and Meta and support and whatever. And she was like, I have an amazing person who works there. I'll connect you with her. And so that conversation happened the night while I was on the journey. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so synchronistic. So I message her and I'm like, hey, can you connect me to this woman? And I'm like, look, God, I'm changing my username, trying to get it done. I'm in action. I'm going to the conference. So I go to the conference, and the moment I walk in, I see a friend of mine. And she says to me, Mark, oh my God, I heard what happened. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm more than okay. I had a tremendous journey. I had a great experience. It brought a lot of introspection. And I always think, like, look, I couldn't undo it, right? Like, there was no antidote to getting out of what I was in. So I had to embrace what I was in. But what was funny is that as I'm standing talking to her, I'm like, I got to go find this woman that ate it with me, because I was like, I'm really worried about her. And as I say that to her, these two women walk by who I was speaking to, the one who I split it with. I'm like, hey, are you okay? She's like, so regulated, like in the most regulated voice. She goes, yeah, I'm so okay. And I'm like, man, I couldn't find you, and I really wanted to be able to just make sure you were good. And you know, I was worried that you thought maybe I knew, but I didn't know. And she's like, I'm like, how was your experience? And she was like, it was amazing. It was exactly what I needed. It was really heart opening. And she's like, while I was filming the parts of the conference, all of a sudden her hands were tingling. And she's like, oh, the sun's kind of getting a little hot. And she's like, I should probably go, because she could feel that something was coming on. And yeah, so I was laughing because what my friend said to me, like, could we hold space for the possibility that it could be a really beautiful experience for her? And it was about the best possible answer I could get, you know, and I recognize that it's just a genuine care and concern for someone too, right? Like, it's a natural response to be wanting to know that someone's okay, especially if you're not sure if they've ever experienced something like that. And it's a lot easier to go through something like that when someone you're with has been through something like that. And so especially when you know you're taking it, right? Because otherwise it kind of feels like I was reconciling the feeling that I non-consensually ate this thing. I was really thinking about, like, you know, is a moment like that the moment everything changes in your life? You know, when Kylie and I broke up, I was having dinner with my friend Jackson, and there was a drawer in my house in Vancouver, and it had marijuana in it. Now look, in BC, I think every house comes with a drawer like this, so that wasn't totally out of nowhere, but I almost never did THC. So I opened the drawer and I was like, listen, God, if you're good with me trying this tonight and using it, then give me a yes or a no. So I'm eating steak with my buddy Jackson, and all of a sudden I start choking on the steak. And I've never choked on anything. Like, it's blocking my airway. I actually can't breathe. And I'm like, and so I get up and he's doing the Heimlich maneuver on me, and it starts to move, and I end up swallowing it, which I'm like, wait, isn't the Heimlich supposed to make it pop out? Either way, while I'm choking, I'm thinking, is this how it all ends? Like, I'm thinking about how, like, vegan groups would be, steak kills, man, you know? But I'm really in that real time being like, are these my last moments on Earth? This is kind of a shitty way to go. And when I was probably 41 when that happened, 42. And when I was 25, I was playing soccer and I broke my leg, and I went leg to leg with another guy. We both broke our legs. And that's how hard we hit. And when I was in the hospital, Canadian healthcare is pretty shitty, sorry to tell everybody. But I had to wait 5 days for surgery because the ORs were all, I kept getting bumped. And because of sitting for so long, and then they put what's called an intermedullary, an IM nail in my tibia. And when they push the nail in your leg, it pushes out the bone marrow, and they call that fat showering. And I ended up getting an embolism in my lung from the marrow. It's called a fat embolism. And, you know, they warned me before the surgery, oh, there's like a 4% chance that you can get a fat embolism. And I was like, yeah, 4%, right? Like, you don't really think about those things. But then once you've been the 4%, the next time they give you percentages and they're higher, you get pretty terrified, because you're like, well, I already took a 4. Like, if you give me anything above a 10, I'm kind of terrified. And so I'm laying in the hallway of the hospital going to get another CT scan because they can't figure out what's wrong with me. And I'm on oxygen and lots of stuff's happening. And at the time, I was addicted to Copenhagen, chewing tobacco, and I really wanted to quit. It was very out of integrity with my identity. Like, I was very health-focused, fitness, all the things, but I was doing this one thing that was not in alignment with my values, and I was struggling to quit. And I remember laying in that hallway, and I was told that there was quite a high percentage of mortality from fat embolisms. And I remember laying in that hallway thinking, like, I'm not ready to go. Like, I don't want to die. I have like so much more I want to do. And at that time, I was a pharmaceutical rep. So, you know, I hadn't even, but it was the birth of really thinking about the impermanence of life. And I made a deal. I was like, if I make it through this, I will never chew again a day in my life. And I quit in that moment. And I discovered that there is something powerful about leveraging things you need to hold yourself accountable to integrity. And last week, it's been kind of like an accumulation. This is the second story, but it's short. Last week, I was chopping wood with my son with a splitting axe. And my son, I gave him my gloves because he wanted to carry wood in and out, and he likes wearing the gloves. And I normally wear these like thick leather gloves when I chop the wood. And when I'm like moving to go get more wood and I have the splitting axe in my hand, those axes are really like heavy. And this one was new, so it was sharp. And I like turn and it snags on something and then swings back like lightly. It like hits the block I was chopping on. And then like as I swing, just the momentum, it was really weird, but like the momentum of how it got stuck and then me moving, it just bumped my hand. And when it bumped my hand, you could see my hand here and you're not seeing it. I'm just showing a bandage around the back of my hand. It bumps my hand and I'm like, oh, that's like a little cut. Okay. And so I'm like, I could chop some more wood. So I chop another couple and then it's just gushing blood. And so I go inside and I could see that it's bigger than just a superficial paper cut kind of thing. It's gone through pretty good layers. I'm lucky because it's between my index finger and my thumb. So it's about right here, like right where, you know, inside that little webbing from your thumb more towards the index finger. And I clean it out, I spray it, I disinfect it, and then I put a butterfly Band-Aid on it and close it up. But I'm like, if I move my hand too much, this is going to open. And also, I need probably some more Band-Aids to hold that pretty tight. So I go to the hospital, or sorry, to the pharmacy. And as I get up to the pharmacy, it's now pretty swollen. Like there's a hematoma, like a little blood clot below my Band-Aid. I can feel it's quite big. I'm like, wow, this is way different than a regular cut, right? Where your finger gets cut. So I show it to the pharmacist and she's like, look, it's clean. Looks like you've done all the right things. You might need a stitch in that. So I text my buddy who's a paramedic. He's not available. And so I text a friend who's a family doctor, and she's amazing. And I'm like, hey, are you working? She works a lot. She's like, no, what happened? I tell her, she's like, yo, just come over after dinner and in like an hour and a half. In my mind, I'm thinking, what happens if I bleed out? Of course, that's not a big deal. It's not happening. But she's like, yeah, just come over in like an hour and a half and I'll glue it. So I get it done. Everything's good. But I think to myself that sort of this not following the procedure of putting on the gloves and being really mindful of how I do this very, like you have to have reverence for the things you decide to do. And I don't know if you know the history of pre-op checklists, but originally they didn't have pre-op checklists for surgeries. And what they had was like a pretty high mortality rate for patients from infection. And so this physician, I believe it was a physician, was like, we should do a pre-op checklist and that way we'll have consistency and we'll reduce mortality from infections during operations. Goes something like that. But anyways, the whole point is that doctors didn't want to do it because of the ego. Like, I shouldn't have to do that. Like, nah, I'm a professional, I'm a doctor, blah, blah. And no hate on doctors, but hey, we all have identity traps that we can fall prey to. But the procedures exist for a reason, because it allows us not to forget everything, and that care, like when I learned how to shoot a gun, you know, my dad was very militant about the procedure so that there was always safety and you must always do these things. And I was thinking about how simple of a decision it was to give my gloves to my son, to not want him to feel upset about not getting the gloves and protecting my own hands and letting him be uncomfortable, and then maybe getting him a different set or whatever it is. But that I put myself at risk and then I And my hand would have never got cut with that glove on. And I'm thinking, like, again, you might be like, well, there's a lot of ruminating, but let me walk you through. I look at my son and I'm like, I love him so much. And being able to see another generation other than your parents really puts a lot of life into perspective. And I really looked at him and thought, I don't know what's going to happen with my cut, right? Like, is it going to get infected? Could I become septic? Like, I know a lot about that stuff. I worked in that world. And again, it's not likely, but it's possible. And I only say that because it's always these things that seem like minute decisions. Like when people are like, oh, I'll just drive home after a few drinks and it won't be a big deal. It's a fucking huge deal. You know, I'll just skip this step, or I'll just have this one night stand, or I'll just compromise my values, or I'll just continue to date this person who's not aligned. I'll stay in this situationship. And you don't realize that like one decision to not use protection during intimacy, or saying yes to that person that your body is saying absolutely no to. You know, I really look back a lot of my life and look, not everyone is given the grace of getting away with things, right? And it's been a long time since I've cut myself this bad. You know, I had 44 stitches in my head in high school because I got attacked by a gang at a party. I didn't know them, but I had 44 stitches in my head. They broke my hand, actually, ironically, in the exact spot where I cut myself. And I think when you're young, you kind of forget. Like, you just assume that life is going to be granted to you. Like, you're going to have time. And, you know, that's where the midlife crisis comes in, because you realize that you're halfway through and you realize, like, how much life you don't have left to live. And there's such a gift in knowing that the end is coming. And I think that's why when I meet moments that bring my mortality into perspective, it allows me to really say, like, you know, I really thought, what the fuck matters about a username? Like, who gives a shit? Change the fucking thing. You want to change what you want to talk about? You want to change what you do? You know, if like you're listening to this or watching this, it's like you want to start a job or start a podcast or start a YouTube channel or leave a job or apply for something else, pursue a dream, go back to school, fuck school, like whatever it is. It's like none of it actually fucking matters. Like, do the thing. Like, we waste our lives worried about other people's opinions. But the moment you meet your maker, the moment you realize that it's all over, which it is going to all be over, we just are all planning with longer calendars. But the moment you meet that moment of the future version of you who is standing face to face with death, you will not give a fuck about people's opinions anymore. You will not give a shit, because it won't matter, because you'll be brought so face to face with what truly matters, which is, how are you living this life? How are you loving? What's your integrity like? Like, are you full of shit? Are all the things that you say you stand for, do you actually stand for them? Are you one of those people who preaches all the bullshit and then your life is a dirty secret mess? Are you cheating on your partner? Are you not owning that? Are you cheating with somebody? Are you out of integrity with your full potential of how you could love? How about how you could parent? Right? What about your boundaries? What about your fitness? What about your food? You placating your pain with alcohol and weed and fucking sugar, like all of that, you will realize when you meet your maker that you wish you had made choices earlier, because you know right now where you're out of congruence, but you think that you have time. But every decision you make is either a pro-life or pro-death. And I don't mean pro-life from a abortion perspective. Every decision you make is either life-affirming or death-affirming. Is it bringing you closer to death or more alive? And we have to live with that binary. Like, if you were to close your eyes, take a deep breath in, And just imagine yourself sitting at the end. And just sitting with that version of you that's maybe older. And just saying to that version of you, what do I need to do now? What am I putting off? Where am I not congruent? Where am I living for other people's feelings and thoughts? Where am I stuck in an identity I created for myself and then I created agreements with other people about who I was going to be? How do I break myself out of this prison? What is the greatest piece of advice that you have for me on how to shift my life now? Where am I not listening? What do I need to do to honor my life? And then being with that, honoring that. Like you already fucking know. And you know, like loving someone else is such a good form of accountability to creating transformation for you and for me. But it's really at the end of the day, are you proud of who you are? And are the choices you're making actually congruent? If your life became public, would you be honored by that? Or terrified of what people would find out? And it's never too late to clean it all up. It's never too late to get into alignment. You know, I think a lot about, I read recently, that the average person spends 4.37 hours a day on their phone, on social media and shit. That works out to 70 days, 70 fucking days, more than 2 months, right? Isn't that crazy? 10 weeks a year spent on our phone. And that's actually not including the sleep time, right? So it's far more than that. And I just think a lot about how painful that is to know that we are being... Look, you spending time on your phone is exactly how your phone is supposed to work. So like you're actually operating from a place of just doing what the phone is designed to do to your brain. And so if you want to free yourself from the prisons of your incongruence, you need to heal your relationship with presence. And your phone is pulling you away from the ability to be in love, to be connected to people. But more than any of that, because that's all about other things, it's robbing you of the ability to be connected to you. You know, I've said before that the currency of the future is attention. Like the new luxury will be the ability to be present with yourself and to have an attention span. That's going to be a massive competitive advantage. But beyond that, your brain's going to work how it's supposed to work. It's not meant to be just buried in a digital device. That shit's too new for our very biologically evolutionary derived brains. You see what's happening to brains, like developing digital dementia because of digital devices. ChatGPT affects the brain and how it works, right? Like people who use ChatGPT to write an essay, their brains, they don't remember what they wrote. It's like exercise. Writing a first draft is going to the gym for your brain. Reading a book is going to the gym for your brain. And for the first time, I listen to a lot of books, but for the first time in like 5 years, I'm almost done a book reading it. And it's called The First Rule of Mastery by Michael Gervais. I met him and listened to him speak at the Gathering Festival, and I was inspired by his talk, so I bought the book because I'm like, you know what? I'm going to train my brain. It's time to go back to the gym. I'm going to have the best attention span you've ever fucking heard of. So with all that said, I am going to be running a workshop on January 4th. And it is going to be all about what is the biological process and what's going on in our nervous system and our brains with social media and with our smartphones? How do we reclaim our attention? How do we decide where our attention goes? And, you know, I think a lot of people get afraid because they think that I'm going to say you need to get rid of your phone. But what I'm really saying is, no, you don't. You need to be the one who decides your relationship to your phone. Because when you pick it up hundreds of times a day, that's an automated behavior. It's become so subconscious and unconscious because you're seeking the dopamine, the addictive loops that they program into the algorithm. And when you do that, you're not actually truly consenting. And what I mean by that is we start to get resentment with our phone, but it becomes an addictive loop. And so true liberation is realizing that you are consenting to it and starting to insert choice of where you truly want to pick it up and put it down. There's such data to show that even parents using their phone and how that impacts attachment and attunement. And I think about that a lot with my son. But I also think that about that a lot with our partners and our families and our friends. And there's a massive movement to analog, and I'm so excited to be one of the people who leads that, and I hope I get to lead that with you, alongside you. So go sign up for the workshop. It's going to be incredible. I can't wait to see you there, and I really hope this episode is in service of something you've been putting off and wanting to change, and you recognize the impermanence of life. And my hand's good. It's healing up very quickly. And I'm just more in love with life and the urgency that's required to really live it. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please hit subscribe, like, share it with people you know. If you're listening to this, hit follow or subscribe wherever you get the podcast. I'm in deep gratitude for you. And thanks for continuing on the journey alongside me. Much love.